Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello, welcome along to another episode of The Kickoff. A special episode of The Kickoff because I should introduce the man sitting in front of me, a very excited Colin Bouygues from Off The Ball.
All right, Cathal, what's going on?
What's going on? It's a different kind of a kickoff because, look, we're literally recording this straight off the back of the World Cup playoff draw. Yep. Ireland, tell us, what is the story? Who are we playing in March?
Path D sees us play away to the Czech Republic, of course. People will know this by now. And then we will play the winner of Denmark against North Macedonia, but in a very, very exciting turn of events. That final, if we make it, will be at home at the Aviva Stadium in Dublin. We've got the home draw there. We're recording this right after the draw. Like, we're like three floors separate us in this building and we're like, we gotta get this draw. Because like these draws take forever. Like, there's a lot of filler. And we're like, we've booked the studio for a certain time. Like, this needs to be done. So they just made it in time for us. So we got the Czechs. Now, they're in this transitional period of being called the Czech Republic or Czechia.
Yeah.
So now we have to decide that over the next 4 months, what we're going to do there. So the match isn't until the 26th of March, which is a Thursday next year. And then it's 5 days later, the final takes place. But you want to know this cruel fact, Cathal? The loser of that semi-final will play the loser of the other semi-final on the same night of the final in a friendly.
Why?
So
what's the need?
So there's a possibility where we lose to Czechia. I know we don't want to put that negativity in our minds, but just bear with me. Yeah. If we lose to Czechia, then we would play, for instance, possibly North Macedonia if they were to lose to Denmark in a friendly that night as a final. Can you imagine that as a wooden spoon? So that goes for everyone, of course, in all four paths. So like Pathé is real sexy, Cathal. Real, a lot of sex appeal here, like, right? Very charismatic draw. This is like Wales against Bosnia and Herzegovina on one side, and then the other side is Italy against Northern Ireland.
Italy, Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So we got the others there just run through. Poland against Albania will play the winners of Ukraine, Sweden. Graham Potter's Sweden, of course, former West Ham manager. Pat C sees Turkey. They also want to be called something a little different these days. Not Turkey. Turkey. Against Romania. The winners of that will play the winners of Slovakia and Kosovo. That's Path C. And then, of course, we are Path D. So we go to Czechia the 26th of March next year. And then when we win that match, we will play the winners of Denmark against North Macedonia in Dublin 5 days later. The winner of that match goes to the 2026 World Cup.
So Ireland fans flying to Prague, is it?
Yeah, Praha. Yeah.
Praha.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. As we speak. So we're, 20 minutes after the draw?
Yeah.
Let's see what flights are going to cost for that.
Yeah, good shout, yeah.
And how do you feel about the draw? This seems like, whoa.
Well, you know what? You were watching it on your floor and we were watching it down on our floor. And I turned to one of our colleagues and I says, do you know what? No matter who we get here, right? Everyone's going to go, ooh. No matter who you get.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I wanted the sexiest draw. I wanted Craig Bellamy's Wales in Cardiff.
Really?
And I wanted to play Italy in that final, right? And I'll tell you why. Ireland got farewell hockeyed away to Armenia and then we beat Portugal handily at home.
Mm.
We're all over the shop as a country.
Yeah.
There's no rhyme nor reason to how Ireland win games. So just give us the sex appeal. Give us Wales away and give us Italy at home. But I'll take it, look, because if we ride high in the confidence wave that we're all riding on right now, great, like, then we should be Czechia. They're no great Czechs. Look at their recent fixtures. They've struggled against quote-unquote minnows of world football. They hammered Gibraltar last time out, but they lost to the Faroe Islands. They have an interim fella in charge who doesn't have his own Wikipedia page.
Oh, God, so I'm liking the sounds of this now.
Yeah, when you're 35, when you type him in, you have to go real searching for it. I think if you type in his Wikipedia after his name, you'll eventually get it, but it's not immediately obvious.
And he's not a dentist, he's not a carpenter, he's not a...
He doesn't do anything else.
Builder.
He just does football. At least our fella has another backup plan.
Yeah.
Just in case. But this is like, you know, obviously this isn't the Pavel Nedved Czechs or Jan Koller or Milan Baros, you know, the great Czech Republic team of 2004 that... probably should have got to the final of those Euros. You know, these are no great shakes.
Right, okay.
No great checks.
Okay.
But it is Ireland. Like, we don't know what we're going to get. Like, you know, this time, like, literally, as you say, we're recording this on a Thursday lunchtime. This very time last week, we were all saying who's going to replace Hamer Hagamson, not whether.
I know.
And look at us now. Everyone's smiling. It's day five of celebrations.
Tell you who's smiling is Michael O'Leary.
Oh,
Wednesday,
yeah.
Sold out, of course.
Oh, wow.
Can't get a flight. They're going to have to put on more flights.
Yeah.
More flights. Look, hey, I'll be honest with you. As you said, this day last Thursday, we're talking about Hamer and is it Hamer or Hamer?
Hamer, I think.
Hamer. And who'll be replacing him? And I was given out that these international breaks, they're getting in the way of the flow of the Premier League. I was given out about them. Friday morning, I could not wait for Sunday.
He's so fickle. He's so fickle.
But look, and I'll be honest, I was fickle. But I also realised the reason I dreaded them, and look, it's pretty obvious a lot of people did, is because of the negativity that surrounds every game we play. Then all of a sudden, you have a bit of hope.
Yeah.
Whatever happened on Sunday, there was a bit of hope going into it. That's all you want.
You know, dear listener, I was minding my own business in Limerick last Friday morning, and the taxi driver had Today FM on, Dave Moore show, and there's Cahill being, I love international football. It's like my favourite thing. And I'm like, driver, stop the car. I'm getting out of the disgust. This guy has told me, he's like, oh, international break, because it's ruining his beloved Premier League. Like, that's his show. And he's like, why is this being disrupted so much? And you and I were talking about, as we always do, like the running order of the show, what are we going to talk about? And I was like, we're both in agreement. Despite there being a North London derby this weekend in the Premier League, and I know we're going to get to this. It was like, this must be the least anticipated Premier League weekend return that there's ever been. It's like, nobody cares. It's like, we're just so on such a high. So tell me, buddy, how did you enjoy the Hungary winning goal? Where were you on Sunday?
I was at home alone.
Oh, man.
I know, but it's still a moment in time.
It is.
I'll never forget it. But then when you're looking at all the videos of people in bloody Liffey Valley watching it on a screen or whatever.
Did you see the Dublin Airport one?
Incredible.
Where your man had the luggage and he held on to it.
He held on to it.
He got in touch with us.
Go away.
So we talked about him on Monday morning's show, and he ran into our producer Arthur on the street, and he was like, oh, I listen to the show every morning. So he was delighted.
No way.
And then you're like, oh, that was brilliant. And then the euphoria of that message wore off, and I was like, wait, no, you bumped into him on Monday morning. But sure, he's at the airport on Sunday evening.
Yeah.
So how did you... He was in Arrivals. So a load of people went up to the bar when they arrived in Dublin Airport. So how exciting would that be, right? So you get into... I think that's Terminal 2, right?
Yeah,
all familiar with Dublin Airport out there can correct us here. But I think when you go through Terminal 2's arrival gates, I think you can go back up the escalator, and before you go through security at departures, I think there's a bar to the right.
Right, because you're walking
along the
glass thing
anyway. And I think there's a bar there.
Okay.
I always go to the bar inside because I'll say, I'll check in first and all that.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
You know, then you can relax in the bar. So I think that's a bar. So that, I think that's where all the people are. So they all got wind of it and ran up. And I like the some
incredible.
Of the I could
where
hear those
you?
Stories all week. Do you know what happened? I was at home too, right? But like, if you know, with the baby, like.
Yeah.
I swear to God, Carter, right? I'd say she's 18 months old, nearly 19 months old. There might have been 3 times in her young life to date where she's had a major accident occur.
Right.
And I swear to God, the most major accident happened in the 85th minute of this game. And there were 2 adults left in the household to negotiate who would take what, so to speak.
Okay.
And I had a decision to make, Cahill, with the welfare of our firstborn and the Republic of Ireland trying to salvage this game.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what I chose. It is the latter.
Yeah.
And she will never hear this recording ever again. There were some words had, and it was literally, I swear to God, the peak of the mayhem at home. And I'm sure people can relate to it. I'm not going to explicitly say what happened, but I'm sure you know, because we don't want to make this show horrible. Is the peak of what happened, I swear, was literally when Caoimhín Kelleher whipped it into the box.
Really?
And I was hearing it from there. But I was seeing this.
Yeah.
And I just, what did I leave out? Like, so it's flicked on by Liam Scales, and I'm just like, no!
Yeah.
I'm like, it's guttural. It just came out like.
Yeah.
It was just, and then, first thing I thought, like, could I go to the pub? Like, do I need to work tomorrow? And then I'm like, I work in sport. Lunatic.
Yeah.
So you have to.
You need to.
Well, Monday morning was the happiest show we've ever done.
I would say.
It was just amazing, you know, because it was like, do you know, every Sunday night you'd be talking, I don't want to get too inside baseball, but you'd be, you know, talk about the talking point, and Sunday night is always the most difficult one because you're trying to gather everything from the weekend. This is just joyous. Like, the conversations were short between ourselves and the producers and all that. It was just like, just talk about the game.
Is everything else thrown out the window? There was a lot of GA on.
We
and
had to get rid of the GA segment. So Tommy Rooney went back 24 hours to the Tuesday show. But sure, Tommy was delighted, like, because every time he went online, you could see Tommy's little icon on Instagram liking every single try parrot video.
Yeah.
And we did a bit of rugby at the end, right? Because sure, Ireland had beaten Australia on Saturday after or Saturday evening in historical terms. It was like 46-19. Yeah. It's an amazing score. Yeah. But and I thought Saturday night going to bed was like, ah, that'll be the big one now Monday morning. Because, like, you know, we'll probably come up short against Hungary. And it looked like that way up until try parrots equalised already to make it 2-2. But, like, I could just talk about it all day.
Yeah.
For the rest of the year, honest to God, like, we do end of year reviews and off the ball, and we put in our submissions last week, each of us, and all of us are just editing them out, being like, it's just this moment.
Yeah,
you know, it's just.
Yeah.
And like, the other thing is, was it had no right to be when it was, God. Like, it was a dirty Sunday afternoon in mid November. There's nothing to look forward to on paper, right? The last bank holiday of the year outside of Christmas has been and gone. In school terms, it's exam season. In business terms, KPIs still need to be hit. It's always a little bit stressful before the sales department kind of starts winding down. I'm talking business in general now. And there's very few smiles to go around per capita. You're waking up dark, you're coming home dark. This was a summer feel on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
When Troy Parrott got that winner, it was like it was sunny outside, it was warm. And like when we talk about football, you and I every week, and we make it enjoyable to talk about, like, but this was something that you didn't have to try at all, like.
Mm. Yeah, it was incredible.
You know what I mean?
I do wish I had someone to share the moment with, but it's still a moment that you'll never forget.
Yeah, but then
wherever
you
are.
So you're like, so what did you do? What was
just screaming, yeah. Just screaming around the apartment, and I'm just like jumping up and down and looking out the window to see is anyone near me outside. So
you're looking around and then you're watching and you're on your phone.
Yeah,
and then it's the phone blowing up. Like
then it's the thing, you kind of go straight on online, don't you? I same as you. I had that feeling of like, Papa's only around the corner. Like, just run down. I bet you it'll be some crack there now for the next 2 hours. You know, it's that kind of feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's like 90 seconds down the road for us.
Yeah
and honestly, yeah. And it was like, these are the moments you live for.
Well, I'm going to dive into it a bit more with Paul Nealon from Irish Football Fan TV, because he was obviously in Budapest, and I mean, that man has been at some dour away games. I would imagine that this is most favourite. But I want to ask you actually before we do talk a bit about Premier League in the next bit, because we do need to go back. The Premier League, who wants that?
Like,
we were spoiled with all these international breaks. Spoiled, I would say. Okay, I was giving out about
my friend.
It. Tormented, and now we have to wait till March for the next one.
I know, four months away.
How long have you been working with Off the Ball?
Good question. I'd say approaching 7 years.
7 years. And in terms of sporting moments, where does this rank in your career with Off the Ball?
Top five for sure. Shane Lowry winning the Open.
Oh yeah.
Which was only a few months into when I was working here.
Cool. Oh yeah.
This year alone, Rory at the Masters. So I stayed up so late after that. I got sick a few days later from it because I had like no sleep because we were up at like 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And I think everyone, like, there was loads of sickness going around that week in the office because people just couldn't go to bed. The Ryder Cup, because it got way too exciting on that Sunday night when America nearly did it. That's only this year. And then what else do we have? Like, I've had two massive disappointments in a row with Cork.
Yeah.
Massive.
Really, you haven't had that Monday morning yet.
No. And you know, so it's actually, you know what? It's probably a little bit of recency bias because I'd have to really think about it, but the way you summarise it there with that Monday morning feeling, it probably is what just happened 5 days ago. It probably is this week.
Yeah.
Ireland beating Hungary because I'm still watching the montages back. I'm watching any. We appear in one of the videos. I ask the brilliant football journalist Gavin Cooney from the 42.ie.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
He's actually on Sky Sports during the week talking brilliantly.
Excellent journalist. And this day last week, or maybe the Wednesday last week, I said, look, you know, basically quickly before we wrap up, like, your predictions for these two games, Portugal and Hungary. And Gavin spoke on behalf of the whole country. Like, you know, people are forgetting this. On behalf of the whole country, Gavin said, I think we're going to lose both games. And then I did like an accidental Louis Theroux on it where I was just silent for a few seconds. Me and Ger were both silent and I just went, yeah. And it's in montages.
And it clips
because it's perfect, because then it's like the Portugal game and so on. And you know what? Even the Portugal game, we were at the podcast awards. Remember we talked about this last week?
Yeah, hard luck.
So thanks, yeah. So
Troy Parrott made up for it.
Yeah, but that's the murmurs that are going around the room when Parrott got a second. Whatever about the first goal, but second, and people were properly distracted for the rest of the awards.
Really? Yeah.
The bar next door was hit like in the second half because it was... You got to be there for this. Like, this is amazing. But even then, waking up Friday morning, it was like listening to yourself there on Dave's show, Lion. It was like, it's probably just going to be this game, and like, I would probably, you know, come up short against Hungary because I don't think we can back it up. And then to go behind after 3 minutes against Hungary.
And then you're like, at least they got this far.
And to go behind again.
Yeah.
Go 2-1 down after drawing up. And the second half was just an amazing match. Like, it was back and forth.
It was incredible.
I could talk about it all day. It was
amazing. I know. And look, it's like just giving life to everyone. We're almost a week on from it now.
Yeah.
And yeah, as you said, it's just, it's a moment in time. Like even talking to my mother during the week on the phone, who is not a sport fan at all, and she goes, "Well, did you watch the match?" And I says, "I did, yeah." She goes, "Geez, it was brilliant, wasn't it?" And
I love that.
This is a big deal. This is a big
deal. That's the best thing about it. Like, I know we have to move on, but that's the best thing about it, is when you properly put the country together. And downstairs today, like half an hour ago, when that draw was made, there's people on that first floor where we work, so we share it with News Talk off the Baldos. And people are gathered around the TV to watch it.
Yeah.
And it's 2025, you know?
Yeah.
There's very, very little of that communal togetherness, especially in a workplace. Because everyone, you just communicate online. There's no problem. You don't need to do anything. And it was properly like why are we all watching the TV? We're going to hear about the draw on our phones in a second.
Yeah, but
you don't need to watch it live, but there's that feeling.
There is, yeah, yeah. Know? Yeah, no, there definitely is. It's look, wow. Could you imagine if we get to the World Cup? The kickoff. We'll definitely be going on tour. We're going to America.
Oh,
we're going
to America. I'll have a few decisions to make there at home. But yeah, I'll give you a tentative yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, that is Ireland. As I said, Paul Nealon from Irish Football Fan TV. He will be on later on in the show. We'll dig into it a bit deeper and get his thoughts on the magical night in Budapest.
Yeah.
And get his thoughts about Prague as well. Premier League is back this weekend. Mm-hmm. In case anyone forgot, yes, it is happening. And also, we did start our Premier League 11, our best Premier League 11. Great time to start this little segment. How do we fit everything in? So we picked our goalkeeper, who's Peter Schmeichel.
Yeah.
We must pick our right back. We will do that after the break.
The Kickoff
with Colm An Oge and Sky Sports.
Now, Colm, that's all parked, right?
Yeah.
Ireland. I don't know how we're going to think of anything else until March. But the Premier League is back this weekend. We'll look ahead to one or two of the games in a minute. But first, we picked our goalkeeper for our what are we calling it? The kickoff all-time Premier League 11. Does that sound okay?
Yeah. It explains what it is.
So, after going down memory lane with some fantastic, fantastic names. My favourite was Brad Friedel, by the way.
You just named every other goalkeeper that has ever been.
You did. But we must pick Mr. Right Back, okay? Yeah. Any honourable mentions?
Yeah, we'll be more succinct at this time.
Okay, yeah, good idea.
We're just riffing. We're like doing a jazz solo last week.
Yeah, don't give me every single right back
it
that's
was
ever
like,
played.
In the Garden of Eden, that song, which is 15 minutes long, because it's keeping going. Like,
yeah.
And so I'll give you three honourable mentions and then three selections, okay? Because I want to be tougher on the list, the criteria.
That's okay? Fair enough. Yeah, yeah, we can't be given every right back. You'd nearly be involved if we were doing every right back.
Just three who I really considered, let's say. And
okay.
Okay,
yeah.
So number one is our own, Seamus Coleman.
Okay, really?
So he doesn't get in, but he's actually fourth on my list. Now, that comes with the absolute acknowledgement that I am massively biased there.
Yeah.
Massive. But I mean, and also what we were just talking about. But he has, I suppose, if you want to look at it objectively, he's like, you know, a one club man in the Premier League. I think he has that brief loan spell at Blackpool. 60 grand and all, we know all about that. That's how much Everton paid for him to get him from Sligo Rovers, so it's nothing.
Wow.
But like, if you actually, do you know how I tried to rate it, right? If you take away the passion that he is as an Irish person and how great he is for our country and all that, and his mentality, if you actually look at him as a footballer, he's very technically good. Very, very strong. Like, he scores a great goal a couple of years ago at home to Leeds United, where he's out in the flank and he puts it into the far corner. Now, you could argue it was a cross, but the technique was purposeful, whatever he did, you know about it. And there is something about that where there's a marauding run nature to him that, like, I'd say he's a nightmare to play against as a left winger because he won't leave you alone. And then just when you think, well, okay, he's a good defender and we've seen loads of those, it was like he can get up and attack as well. He's an eye for a pass and he's calm on the ball, but he's a warrior.
A leader.
I can't see him having too many weaknesses. So that's why he's an honourable mention.
Will this be his last season?
I don't know, actually. Do you know what I was thinking? So 4 months to go until that semi-final against Czechia. There's a world, Cahill, where Coleman doesn't kick a football for Everton because he's not first choice anymore. He's on the bench.
Last 90 minutes he played with Everton was early October.
Would he go out on loan? Would he go on loan in January for the sole reason of being match fit for the Czechia game on the 26th of March. Now that sounds mental for one game. Because you could say, look, he doesn't need to play that much because he's proven, even this last week alone against Portugal and Hungary, is that the guy doesn't need to be playing regular football these days at club level to be ready for international football. But I do wonder, does he want to be that little bit more ready? Because, you know, he still gets substituted. He can't play the whole game. Now, that is an age thing as well.
Yeah.
But the guy is not playing at all regularly for Everton. A few minutes here and there, maybe. But sure, like, it's Jake O'Brien most of the time on the right-hand side. They have Nathan Patterson as well. So Everton have options right back. And he's just not as important for them in the starting 11 anymore.
Interesting take.
Yeah, I just it's more of a question. I don't think there's a world where he will go. I think Everton will hold on to him regardless.
You'd want to be wrapping him up in cotton wool, just making sure he's...
And all of them, you know, all of them. Yeah. But at the same time, do you want to wrap up Troy Parrott, right? Or do you want to leave him continue his goal-scoring phenomenon with AZ Alkmaar?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely saw how match fit he was come the end of the game, because himself and Scales are the ones that chased him down.
The way, and exactly out in the flank.
Yeah.
And he timed,
and then he was back in. So, like, that's match. That's a fellow who's playing a lot of games and he's properly match fit.
Exactly. So, anyway, Coleman, all jokes aside, I think he's one of the best Premier League fullbacks, but he wouldn't be in my top three. Another honourable mention is Kieran Trippier.
Oh, yeah.
I liked his spell at Atletico Madrid. I remember thinking that was like a real brave call at the time, because he was flying it with Spurs. And we'll get to another former Spurs right back in a second. But when he was at Burnley, I always thought, like, he's quality. Like, his technique is quality. And then he did brilliantly at Spurs, enough for Diego Simeone to take notice and bring him to Atletico. And I think he did well there. This wasn't like, you know, our own Matt Doherty when he went to Atletico. And I think he played like 16 minutes of football in total. Trippier was a really important part of that Atleti side. And he developed his game and he learned a lot kind of late enough in his career. He came back an even more accomplished player. I remember I was surprised that Newcastle signed him. And like, Newcastle are a big club, but I was surprised that they got him. That's how I thought it was a bit of a coup. I know he's kind of sort of in and out of the Newcastle side these days. And again, that's a bit like Coleman thing with ageing. But I think Trippier has very, very similar attributes to Coleman. Probably not as defensively as assured as Coleman. Probably doesn't have the level of concentration, but I think he's technically superior. And I'd have him in any of my teams all day long. Like, any club I'd support, I'd love Trippier in the team, because he's so lethal through set pieces as well. Mm. So he's another honourable mention. And the other one is Lauren. Do you remember Lauren, the right back Arsenal. For Arsenal?
Yeah.
The invincible guy. He was just a bastard to play against. Yeah. He was like a nightmare. Wouldn't leave you alone. Tenacious. Would always be on the legal side of tough. Just a nightmare to play against. Like,
Lauren.
Such a huge part of that invincible side at right back. That position was his. And a lethal player.
Okay.
So they're my honourable mentions. So my official list. Do you want 3-2-1? Do you want 1-2-3? Or do you want any particular order?
Come on, 3-2-1.
3-2-1. Okay. Number three, I'm going to go Kyle Walker.
Okay.
Kyle Walker now at Burnley, of course. Doing very well at Burnley. Very similar career to Kieran Trippier, because I mentioned that I would be saying stuff about another former Spurs right back. But Kyle Walker, he started at Sheffield United. He's a Sheffield United boy. He'd probably end up back there if he wants to. But with Spurs, again, they had that really, really good side under Maurizio Pochettino, Spurs, where Danny Rose was the other side, left back. Like, what happened to Danny Rose? Like, just disappeared. But on the right back side, you had Trippier and Walker. Like, what a combination, one or the other, one after the other.
Yeah.
The thing with Walker is, I would say, one-on-one defending, he's the biggest nightmare in Premier League history to play against. Just outrageous pace and strength.
Actually, Eden Hazard was in a interview a couple of years back, and he was asked when he was over at Madrid, and he was asked who was the toughest opponent he ever faced in the Premier League. This is what he had to say:
Kyle Walker.
Why?
He's strong. He's fast. You know, I'm strong. I'm fast, but he's stronger than me and he's faster than me. So
he was tough to beat.
Yeah. As a right back, he's, I think, one of the best at the moment.
Rings true.
Yeah, he was nightmare. Very fast.
And it's amazing how it all went south from Man City, because this time last year, we're talking about this time last week with Ireland, this time last season, Kyle Walker was the Man City captain, and he's had a club in between Burnley since then. Like, he went on loan to AC Milan last January, and he said he regrets that as well. He just wanted out of Man City, and he said he regrets going to Milan, although I would imagine going abroad is a good experience. And then Burnley snapped him up in the summer, and I was like, Burnley? I was like, how has he ended up down there? Like, Burnley just promoted, like, likely to go back down again, and he's racked up at Burnley. Why doesn't anybody else want him?
Mm.
But like, I suppose again it comes down to age. Like, but on his day, couldn't get by him. But then he also has the technique. Like, he'd score some class goals from distance, and he'd bomb forward as well. And bombing forward is the big attribute of my number two.
Oh, I think I know who this is. Go on.
I don't think you do. I'm not sure. I would really struggle between one and two.
I think I know who your top two are.
Okay. Go right. On.
So it's either Trent or it's Gary Neville. Am I right?
Yeah, and I'm going to be really unbiased and being like, no, Gary Neville is number one.
That's the reason you're struggling.
I'm going to put Gary Neville number two. Ooh. Right, I'm going to put Gary Neville number two.
Okay,
right. So the thing with Gary Neville is he suffers, ooh, I think, a bit from Gary Lineker syndrome, the two Garys, in that he stopped being discussed as a footballer anymore because he's so prominent in the media.
Yeah, and he also kind of talks himself down in his career as well, doesn't he?
He's an interesting personality in that way, right? Because he's like one of the most self-deprecating high-level footballers that there's ever been. Considering what Gary Neville's won it all at club level, literally, was a huge part of that treble-winning season, for example, and played with England, Kyle, in Euro 96 when he was only a pup, and that's when Terry Venables had a ridiculous cohort of players to choose from, and Gary Neville was playing those games. He was only a young fella.
Yeah,
quality, right? But as you say, he undermines himself loads. When he undermines himself, people don't tend to correct him that much, so they kind of go along with it.
Yeah,
and
sometimes Roy Keane on the Stick
Roy
to Football
would be
podcast
like, "Come on, you're being ridiculous, yeah, right?" Yeah. Now he just got into the Hall of Fame there a few weeks ago, and yeah, I was like, "Of course, they've voted for you." With Gary Neville, the reason I'm giving it to him as well is that I think he had actually an underrated skill was his crossing ability. So he had a great partnership with his best buddy, David Beckham. But you'd remember from growing up is that Beckham would have the ball in the right flank and he'd shape the cross it, but opposition players read that because they would know like that's the biggest danger United have. One of them anyway, certainly, is Beckham crossing it in. And then Gary Neville would bomb on past him. And more often than not, it was a decoy. He would never even need Gary Neville because he wanted to create space for himself. But when he did need Neville, and he passed it on to him. Never whip it in, no bother to him. And you know, you were mentioning there, was it Eden Hazard talking about Kyle Walker? Paul Merson, Merseyside, the great Arsenal player, he talks about Gary Neville in his book, right? I think he names like an English 11 that he played with or against, and they would have been English teammates, England international teammates. And Merson said he's unbelievably underrated. Like, you know, you don't realise you see him up close. So it's a bit like the Kyle Walker stuff. Now, Walker, I think, is like, Walker is quicker and stronger and probably technically superior, but Neville was absolutely relentless.
Yeah.
I'd say the most, if there is a category for this, the most relentless fullback in Premier League history, in that he would not leave you alone. And then sometimes he'd have bad moments like Sean Gorter, the Manchester Derby, where he was embarrassed, and there was another Manchester Derby where he didn't get a penalty and he was banging the ground in frustration like a bold child, and he was running after Steve McManaman. So he has these embarrassing moments, and like Patrick Vieira in the tunnel and all that. But when you take away the perception of Neville, right, the way he talks about himself and what he's up to these days, basically, if you strip all of that away and look at him as a footballer, fine player. Started as a central defender, moved out to right back because he was seen as too small. He'd get the very occasional goal. It was always a good finish.
5 Premier League goals he got.
Yeah, and he chipped Gigi Buffon in the Champions League game away to Juventus and hit the bar. But he was just a constant engine for you up and down the wing. And look, you could use that to describe a load of right backs that are playing in the Premier League. But I guess what Neville was, he was really, really comfortable playing in brilliant sides.
Yeah. He was like the benchmark for a right back.
Because most players around him were better, but he was really comfortable in that company.
Yeah.
And I actually don't think that's a ubiquitous trait at all.
Yeah. They all trusted him almost.
Exactly.
So. Okay. Well, look, that's actually surprising. I won't lie. That's surprising. I did think he would be your number one.
I was trying to subtly pick a United 11 here throughout this all like 3 months that we do this.
We're only at right back. Yeah. Right. Your right back on the all time Premier League 11 is.
Absolutely. It's Alexander Arnold! And it is picture perfect. His most recent goal came against Fulham in December. Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Alexander-Arnold, oh, superb. Set up by Salah with that little back heel. Just made the angle that much more advantageous.
Alexander-Arnold has come up with an absolute pearler. Just beautiful. It is just beautiful.
What a player.
For me now, and this is only my team, all right? Everyone relax. But this isn't even close, Kyle.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's... I Gary Neville and Kyle Walker are quite close, and Seamus Coburn is quite close to get into the list. But Trent Alexander-Arnold, for me, I've never seen technique like it.
Okay.
I've never seen it.
But if I was to throw you the obvious criticism of him.
I get you, yeah. But his.
Can't defend the best.
Yeah. Can't defend, never could defend. Doesn't matter. Roberto Carlos. Doesn't matter. What he could do with a football, how much Liverpool miss him at times already.
Yeah.
Before I came up, I actually looked at his highlights. And his highlights are a mixture of goals and assists. He's right back.
Yeah.
He'd make a striker blush with his technique. Like, he was scoring raspers from 30 yards out. He's scoring free kicks. His passing range, the only player I've seen have a better passing range, English player, is David Beckham.
That's a big compliment.
Yeah, in long range passing, like.
And David Beckham might be in this team. We don't know yet.
That's true. Balls pinging around the place, like Steven Gerrard and Wayne Rooney, like fabulous technical players. Paul Gascoigne, obviously one of the best. Glenn Hoddle, and Chris Waddle, and all that. I get that. But long range passing, Trent Alexander-Arnold, it was like, can't close him down in time. He's going to kill you if he has able runners with him, and he does because he plays for class teams. Lethal. I don't care about his defensive deficiencies. That's how good he is on the ball.
Anyway, we have Schmeichel in the goal, so I mean,
he'll be all right.
Wait till we get Schmeichel doesn't get chipped. Yeah. Okay, there you have it. Right back by a long shot, says Colm.
In my opinion,
Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah, we did say the Premier League is back this weekend. Who cares? We care. Of course, we care. What's your pick of the weekend? One game.
Only joking, Sky. Arsenal Tottenham, the North London derby, of course. I actually do love this game. 4:30 on Sunday. 4-4 is the first thing I remember from this. The Emirates Stadium. David Bentley scored one of my favourite goals in Premier League history in, I want to say, October 2008. Touched the volley from about 40 odd yards out, and Bentley's kind of back in the media now, so they're showing that goal a lot.
Yeah,
but I love Arsenal Spurs, and I particularly like it at the Emirates as well. Highbury / the Emirates throughout the years, always goals, great fun.
Okay, so, and you're going to give Arsenal
3 Tottenham 2.
Arsenal 3 Tottenham 2. That's a good game. That's an exciting game. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
No bother, Colm.
Colm, you're a great man. We're excited. We're all off to Prague. We're all off to America in the summertime.
I'm going to Prague in February.
Are you?
I just realised that right now. And I've been there. I was there in February a few years ago too.
Oh God.
I just realised that.
Just don't come home. Like, stay out there. you could see what the feeling is on the ground.
Yeah. Journalism.
Oh yeah, I'd say that's what you're coming out for. All right. Sound, we'll talk to you next
all
week,
right,
Colm.
Nice one.
Cheers. The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports. So if you've listened to the show before, then you would know that usually around this time we talk to a fan of a Premier League club. The great news is that's not happening this week, because Ireland have done so well in the past week, beating both Portugal and Hungary. I'm delighted to say that we have one of Ireland's biggest football fans. In fact, he's such a big fan, he created Irish Football Fan TV. Paul Nealon, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, cloud nine this past week, you know, and then I'm sure we'll speak about the draw, but we have a favourable draw considering the other draws we might have gotten.
Yeah, and we'll get stuck into the draw in a bit, because as we record this, the draw has been made maybe an hour and a half ago, and you're very good to come into studio here to chat about it. But first of all, I just want to talk to you about the week you've had, because like this day last week, even the most hopeful supporter did not think how the next few days would go, I would imagine. Take me back to Thursday night, first of all. 2-0 in the Aviva, Ronaldo getting sent off. What was that night like?
Well, just like you said, it was like there was a sense of what's the point. There literally was to the point where I always tried to be as positive as possible about the team and always trying to get behind him and stuff, but obviously the way results were going and stuff like that, obviously the start of the group up until the game against Portugal at home, we were narrowly lost against them away. I was at that and I felt as though we struggled in that game to create chances. So we'd gone into the Portugal game going, where are we going to get the chances from? And Evan had been scoring the goals up until that point. But I always did have faith in Troy. I've done bits with him in the past. I've watched him closely at Alkmaar as well. So when I did see him score, I didn't have surprise it was him that scored the goal. But when I remember sitting there in the media area, and there was a point where I was going, like, what's the point? And I was a little bit... for the first time in a long time, disinterested. I felt like the group was out of our hands. I felt like everything was gone against us. I felt like there was really no hope. And then we put in one of the best performances I've ever seen, especially since I set up the channel. I think the last kind of game that we had a result like that was Scotland, but it was never to the magnitude of, you know, beating a Portugal. Goes back to Shane Long against Germany.
Yeah.
So there was just so much goodwill. And that's what I've watched some of these lads come up since the 21s to come of age. Kelleher, Parrott, Jake O'Brien, Collins. There's so many of them that came up through the 21s, and I've watched their journey, and they've all kind of came through a really horrible patch of really bad results, and just to see it for them as well, because I always kind of, as I say, hone in on that kind of positivity side of things, and sometimes I get battered online for being, you don't criticise them enough. It's like, well, I actually kind of know some of them. On a personal level, I want them to do well. I'm a supporter first and foremost, and probably a journalist second. So I'd be more of the ilk of wanting to see us do well, and I'm all for the positivity, and I'm all for that wonderful result, and to see the Ronaldo stuff then as well. But it was brilliant, even because the highlight, I suppose, of the week from our side of things was Ronaldo. We got some brilliant content out of him in the press conference and all that sort of stuff. Like, we got unbelievable hits, so that was great. So we're thinking, at least at the very least, we'll have Ronaldo content. But then the way it spun, like, unreal.
So then, fast forward to Sunday, 2 o'clock. You were in Budapest, a good few days on the lead up to it. Were you feeling confident on the night before, let's say?
Definitely more confident. I felt like we're going there with something to play for, which we obviously, if with the way they beat Armenia as well, we were kind of effectively going to the Portuguese game, and that's probably why a lot of that kind of atmosphere was a bit dull at the time, because they'd beaten Armenia, so we felt as though if we didn't get a result against Portugal, it was completely out of our hands, you know. So the fact is, we were all going there and going, look, if we can try and match a similar sort of performance to what we did against Portugal, it's going to be achievable, but it won't be easy. But I'll tell you one thing though, being in the stadium, and their fans are unbelievable. Like, the way they made me intimidated, and I wasn't even playing the match, so
it felt hostile.
Oh yeah. But they were unbelievable. They weren't doing anything in particular, but just the way they were screaming, shouting, jumping, and they did it for the whole game.
Got a bit quiet near the end. Talk to me about that last minute. Actually, let's relive it, because I was not as blessed as you are, Paul. I actually was home alone watching this, right?
One last throw of the dice. It's all on this from Creamy Kelleher. Scales is up after it. Scales wins the header. There's a chance. Yeah! Oh, there's the goal. That's Troy Parrott. That is unbelievable. He scored a hat-trick. And right at the death, Ireland have done it. I've never seen anything like it. Absolutely remarkable. Right at the end, Hungary had been caught. They were hanging on, it seems like, for the whole night. Certainly when it went 2-2. This is just stunning. 3-2. The time is up. The referee has to finish the game. I've no voice left.
I just love Ray Houghton's scream. I actually spoke to Ray Houghton on the show on Friday before he went off, and he was just saying he had hope, and he was thinking, you have to have hope going off to these games. And isn't the best thing about heading off to Budapest is that there is hope, no matter how much the odds might be stacked against you. And look, they weren't that stacked against us after a couple of minutes when Hungary scored. Then you're thinking, oh, we're in trouble here again. But there was hope, and that's probably the best thing about being a fan. Talk to me about that moment that we just heard. Troy Parrott gets the goal, last few minutes of the game. How did you feel? Are you in the press box?
Yeah, but it takes me back to, I know we didn't win the game and it was a very similar goal, but I remember being in like sixth class, wheeling out a TV, watching Ireland against Germany, and Robbie Keane obviously scoring that goal, and just that kind of, that late, just kick it into the box and we just see what sort of havoc happens. I couldn't believe it. All I could hear myself was, I'm surprised I couldn't hear Ray and Darren Maloney, because they were like two rows ahead of me. All I could hear was me going, yes! And then all the Hungarian press are around me. I think the one guy, Andy, who works for RTE, and we couldn't believe it. And like, I remember even at the end of the game when I was standing there doing my match reaction, and they were all just looking at me with just pure venom, probably like, oh, I hate you and stuff like that. But I was like, not meaning in any bad way, but the inner fan in me came out, and like, these are moments. I haven't seen a moment like that covering the channel where it's like a last minute winner. Well, I did say to Troy, he loves a last minute winner for Ireland. But in terms of the way it all happened, but even his like his second finish was unbelievable as well. The ball by his eyes and his little, the way he let the ball bounce and the composure. He was just, I'm just so happy for him. And I saw a couple of them in the media mix zone after the game. Like Jason Malone came up, gave me a big hug and shook my hand. And same thing with Troy. And these are lads, as I say, I've watched them come up and I've wanted them to do well so badly. And to see them get their moment finally, you know, there's still a huge way to go. But to have, I think it's a huge psychological shift for the players, which we've all wanted and needed. And I think if you look at the scenes all over the country, I know you said you're on your own, but if you, I'm sure you were seeing the videos of reactions all over every pub.
The airport.
Airport. Name it. Like it, there were so many all over the world. I think as a country, we needed that. I think it's given, I had friends, I had family members, I've had people who don't watch football tell me they love football after that. And that for me, I love hearing that. My one of my best mates, he'd be managing my football team, and his son has never had an interest in football or anything like that. And he watched that game and he saw the emotions. And after that, he was like, "Daddy, I love football." And that for me, and even he'd probably been down in the dumps, and he did say to me, like, Troy Power probably doesn't understand what he's done for a lot of people's mental health in the country as well. There's a lot of people coming up to Christmas, they're stressed out. But to have that moment, like, you can't, if you could bottle a feeling, it'd be that, you know? That's
yeah.
The best way I could put it.
I'd say a lot of people are delighted for you as well, because you've been through some dour nights working at Ireland games, and you've been at games where you've had hope and it didn't work out the way you wanted to. So for the last 5 days, like this whole week, where does this rank, like, in your life?
Probably say the last week's been the best week of my life. I mean, I got to meet Eric Cantona in the last week. We had Ronaldo content. We beat Portugal. We got a last minute winner to win 3-2 away in Hungary. And yeah, we just met so many fans and so many good well wishes and stuff like that. My phone hasn't stopped since last week. It's and then I'm obviously getting, and thanks for having me in here as well. So like, I'm getting kind of asked to come around and speak to people and stuff about it and all. And it's amazing. This is when I first started. As I said, I was in Thailand for the Euros. And when I came home from Canada is when I started up the channel. And I dreamt of days like this. So this is where it's at now. So I'm so happy. And I'm so happy it reminded a lot of people who gave up on this team that there is, and there could still be, good days ahead.
It is a busy day for you because the World Cup playoff draw was made today. It's only a couple of hours ago. Are you happy with it? We'll play Czechia away in March. Did you get your flights booked?
Flights booked to Munich, and then I have to figure out how to, I'm after booking the wrong train because I got way too excited. I have to get a train from Munich to Prague. That's my next venture.
So what? So you've booked your flight?
All the flights to Prague were sold out, so I had to go to Munich.
Okay.
So the Irish fans have all done it. So it's not a problem. I'm happy. When I saw Italy being pulled out in Wales and whoever is the winner of their games, I was like, I don't really want them. And then you've got like Poland and Ukraine. They face, or Ukraine and Sweden, I think it is. So there was those, that was path A and path B. And then you're kind of going into path C and you're thinking, okay, it's, I think it was Slovakia. And then they had, I can't remember.
Kosovo.
I think they played the winner of the Turkey game.
Yeah, Turkey or Romania.
Yeah, so I thought that was, I thought in terms of if you look at path A, B and C, and then we're obviously in D, and then we've got Czech Republic. I think them or Slovakia we would have taken, but I think actually when we look at the Hungary game, the problem with international football, I feel like if we were going there next week, would be in a far better position. The problem is it's in March, you don't know who's fit and you don't know who's available. That's our only problem, isn't it? So I'm just praying and hoping that some of our players get back into a bit of form, obviously in January, and maybe some January moves, maybe some January loans, if you know, so players are back in form. I think, look, it's favourable, and the second game, if we beat Czech Republic, and I don't think we should look past them. I think we should just focus on that game and worry about it after. But the fact of the matter is we're home then in the Aviva if we win. And that's going to give us a great show. But I also want to touch on, don't forget the game we lost to Denmark in 17 or 18, in the World Cup playoff. We got beat 5-1 at home. And that result scarred us. We haven't recovered, probably till the Hungary game, we hadn't really recovered from it. It's been a long, dismal time of results. COVID didn't help in that aspect. And we obviously lost to Slovakia in a playoff in Stephen Kenny's first game in, I think, an empty stadium. But I don't think so. In an ideal world, and if you're a football romanticist, we beat Czech Republic and then we beat Denmark at home and get redemption and we're going to the World Cup, that would be a special way to do it. Don't say 5-1, but just beat them would be a nice way to just turn things, you know. And then we're going there with momentum to the World Cup, all going well. I'm not looking past Czech Republic, but that, if you put it out there, you never know what could happen.
So you're going to fly to Munich in March. You'll get the bus from Munich to Prague. Have you booked your flight home?
Yeah, it's the same way. So it'll be
back up. Yeah.
I booked the wrong times, so I booked the wrong days, but they're non-refundable, so I'll have to go and do that again.
So you're taking a hit there and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it's because I was. I'm not blaming you, but I was rushing, so I was like, and then I did it. But it's not that expensive. I'll sort it later on.
Good, because we couldn't afford it in here. you can't be.
Are you
going to
go? You have to go.
Actually, funnily enough, we're recording the other end of the podcast here, and we just had a glance at the Prague flights and all that, and you're looking at them and thinking, oh, they are not bad. But I don't want to be that much of a fair weather supporter when I was, you know, sometimes giving out about it during the year as well. You know, I can't be that bad, but I mean, I'm just as excited as anyone else. And I very much doubt, if it came to the Aviva, I very much doubt I'd get a ticket. But if I did, oh man, I'd be there with bells and all on, you know. It's just exciting.
If we qualify, are you going to the States?
Oh,
that's,
yeah,
what I was going to ask.
Yeah. I'll be campaigning that this station brings the show to the States. 100%. I hope you're listening, Sky. We're ready to go. Yeah, we'll see you over there.
That's what we love to hear.
Yeah,
you can be a fair weather supporter, it doesn't matter.
Oh yeah, a tournament is different. That's, you know, that'll be my Italian 90. Thanks a million, Paul. I really appreciate it. Best of luck with Everton. If anyone wants to follow you, so what are the handles? Is it Irish Football Fan TV all across the socials, or
at Irish Football Fan TV, and then Twitter is just at Irish Fan TV because it doesn't have that many characters, and then my own is just at Paul Neil 90.
At Paul Neil 90. Paul, you're a gent. Thanks a million.
No, thank you.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
It was a bit of an Irish football heavy pod this week, but the Premier League is back, as we said, and games are live on Sky Sports this weekend. On Saturday at 5:30, Newcastle versus Manchester City, and then Super Sunday, 2 p.m, Leeds versus Aston Villa, and then the big one at 4:30, Arsenal versus Tottenham, live on Sky Sports. Monday Night Football is back as well. Manchester United versus Everton, kickoff there is 8 p.m. Thank you very much for listening. Kickoff at todayfm.com is the email address, and if you haven't liked or subscribed yet, it would mean the world if you could. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the football.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.